Welcome to part 8 of the PDH online course on NFPA 72-07, the fire alarm code. Pre-signal. Now, some of these ideas we're getting into now are a little bit hairy, and let's consider them special cases. Yes, they can be done. Some architects are very sophisticated in the requirements of the code, and they'll ask you if you're doing these specialized things, and it's a good idea to sit down with them and find out exactly what they want. Make sure you're comfortable with it. If there's any question at all, try to talk to the authority having jurisdiction. Well, pre-signal is one of these things. A fire alarm sounds to a control room. The operator can initiate evacuation or abort the alarm. If no action is taken within 60 seconds, the fire alarm automatically signals evacuation. This is what I was remembering in fragments in the last section. The 60-second limit, that if the guard is out, because sometimes guards are not sitting there staring at the tube, it happens on its own. And if the guard delays it, there's a limit on the delays also. And this changes with each version of the code, and it wouldn't surprise me if it changes with local interpretation as well. Here's one that's really interesting. Alarm verification. Two sensors, or one sensor which is reset and trips again within 60 seconds. So if you have activated alarm verification, it means the building does not evacuate, go into full alarm, unless there are two sensors, or one sensor which is reset and retrips. This kind of stuff came up when smoking was very common, and somebody would stand under the smoke detector and trip the detector. Typically, it would reset and not trip again. So you would avoid this false alarm by using alarm verification. I don't know what the current reasoning is on this, and I don't feel comfortable with the idea of delaying evacuation or delaying calling the firefighters. And let me tell you my personal experience and why this is. I live in an allotment, like a lot of people live in an allotment. One of the neighbors had a fire. Now, that's a very unfortunate thing. Top half of their house burned down. Well, that's where all the bedrooms are. They were very unhappy. Everybody was very unhappy about this. The neighbors next door were unhappy because they were afraid that the sparks from this fire, I mean, this is a weenie roast next door, were going to set their houses on fire. And the firefighters were willing to wet down the adjacent houses. They weren't willing to wet down the house that was on fire. Well, what's going on here? The fire chief explained to us afterwards. He had guys in there checking to see if there was anybody in the bedrooms or, you know, in the den or whatever. And if they went down the roof, it would collapse on his men. So they did not dare sprayed on the roof while there were firefighters in the building. Now, I understand this, and I think he made the right decision, and I'm sorry the house suffered such damage. The firemen were doing their job. They were doing their job well. The fire chief was making good decisions. Not good news, but certainly acceptable. The unacceptable part of this was when they called 911, 911 was hooked up to the wrong dispatcher, and when they gave their location, the dispatcher refused to accept it, said, no, I have to transfer you to another district. Then they had to repeat it again to the second district, which immediately sent out the fire trucks. Now, this delay in the 911 failure cost them 30 seconds of response time. And the fire chief was telling us that 30 seconds is critical. That's why they lost the second story of their house, because it was 30 seconds later. Now, is this going to happen to your house? Probably not. Is this going to happen to one of your neighbors? Depending on how you define your neighborhood, yes, this is going to happen. Is this going to happen where you work? Most likely not, and I certainly hope not. But be aware that 30 seconds is critical in a arrival of the big tank trucks and the foam sprayers and all that good stuff. So when we talk about delaying things 60 seconds before it goes into alarm, that makes a difference. It really does make a difference, and we shouldn't accept a 60-second delay easily. If there's a good reason for it, and it matches the wording in the code, and the authority having jurisdiction goes along with it, yeah, go ahead and do it. But let's not be in a hurry to do it. Positive alarm sequence permits an operator 180 seconds to investigate the cause of an alarm. Connecting two fire alarm systems together. This is often required for an addition to an existing building. Each unit must support alarm, supervision, and trouble features. Units may be connected as zones or just trip the overall alarm. Just bring in the sub-alarm as a notification, notification from the small alarm into the large alarm so that it trips evacuation. And you want to go the other way. The big guy should trip the little guy so he evacuates also. And one of the things is you look at it, a lot of times today we're doing additions 20 feet away from the main building. Well, this has got to do with the building code, and it's part of the architect's responsibilities, and I'm not the right guy to explain this, but my understanding is if you have a separate building 20 feet away, you don't have to evacuate one if the other trips. But this is exactly the kind of thing that you want the authority having jurisdiction to make a decision on. The 1999 fire alarm code had an extended discussion of something called data gathering panels. Now, the word doesn't show up in the current code, but data gathering panels is a good idea that still exists even though the words don't show up in the current code. They're limited function fire alarm panels for an area, floor, or building. When connected to the main fire alarm panel, they act as addressable devices and offer selective evacuation. In the event of loss of communication with the main fire alarm panel, they respond to any initiation device with full evacuation of their area, floor, or building. Concept is especially appropriate for phased construction where individual areas are taken off the main panel and temporary construction fire alarm is used. Then after the fire alarm is activated, that's at the end of construction. Silence and reset cannot be performed remotely. And this was a problem that the guys had when they were going to do their central monitoring facility. They wanted to reset each building's alarm from the guy sitting staring at the tube. Well, it's specifically forbidden. See what you want to do then. Exceptions can be granted by the authority having jurisdiction. Building fire alarm may trip a dwelling fire alarm. The dwelling unit may not trip the building fire alarm. And again, I started out saying we're not doing residential. I don't do residential construction with the exception of some public housing high rises. I don't feel I'm especially knowledgeable in this. I am trying to repeat to you what I read in the code, so you have a sense of what's going on. And with the disclaimer, you'll go to the code directly to find out an answer to a specific question on residential. Combination of fire alarm with other systems. Virtually anything can be combined with a fire alarm system so long as it does not interfere with the operation of the fire alarm system. Note the 2007 change that biohazards, chemicals, terrorists, weather, and natural disasters may take precedence over the fire alarm. Owners and salesmen quote this section to buy cheaper equipment to replace the fire alarm, such as the plant SCADA or building PA system. The fire alarm must be 100% fire alarm supervised, UL listed for life safety with two power supplies and that good stuff. Other equipment may be connected to it, but not replace it. The connection must be in a form that cannot interfere with a fire alarm in any conceivable failure mode. Now, let me tell you a real-world example of this, which, by the way, violates the principle. I was asked to review the design documents for a large stadium in a major city, East Coast City, and they were using the PA system for fire alarm notification, and they were not using redundant power supplies on the PA amplifiers. Now, one thing I know for sure is that you want your fire alarm to work when there's a power interruption, and that's why we always put in a power source and a local battery. It's just nothing you discuss. You always do that in a fire alarm system. I think there are some exceptions on generators and all that, but don't do that. Put in the battery, for goodness sake. They sell battery packs for fire alarms. They're not big. They don't cause a lot of trouble, and they give you reliability that if a natural disaster includes a power interruption and a fire, you know about the fire and get out of the place that's affected by it. Well, we were doing the review on this stadium, and they were using the PA speakers for fire alarm, and they were not using the dual power supplies, and they didn't have any form of supervision. And I wrote it up. I said, this is not in accordance with the code. And they came back to me and said it had been approved by the local authority having jurisdiction. Well, who am I to say? Fire pump supervision. The fire pump is normally specified by the piping designer. Close coordination is required to inform the fire alarm of the different trouble and alarm modes. If the fire alarm is pumping, that's the same as a flow switch in a riser diagram. If the fire alarm is, fire pump is turned off, that's the same as a tamper switch being operated on a riser, a sprinkler riser. And those connections must be made to the fire alarm. Notification zones. Provide notification zones to match the evacuation plan of the building. What's the evacuation plan? This is something they don't tell you, but it exists. And I can't tell you where the requirement comes from for it. But every school has an evacuation plan. Every commercial building has an evacuation plan. They don't tell you about it. If you're a school teacher, you may not know about the evacuation plan. Now, again, I visit a lot of schools, and I'm seeing an evacuation plan posted by the doorway in every classroom today. So at least the school districts I visit are making this public information, even though it's been required for a long time. Many office buildings also have it posted near the door. Many office buildings do not have it, and you wouldn't even know it exists. The other place I see it frequently is in motels. Seems like every time I'm out of town, I do see this posted by the door of the motel to know how to get out of it. I happen to know this exists because when I started doing fire alarms, I said, hey, you got to tell me where the rooms are. And they give me a copy of this evacuation plan, and they would always say, this is not current. It's not meaningful for evacuation, but it does show all of the rooms of the school. But let's not comment on that, just that it exists and there is an evacuation plan, and your zones on your fire alarm should match the evacuation plan to the extent possible. Emergency voice and alarm communication. Recorded messages specific to the building are required. Multiple distinct messages are permitted for partial evacuation. Live announcements and instructions from firefighters must be available. So there must be a microphone if you've got a voice alarm system. The fire alarm code does not require voice notification. If the local interpretation of the building code requires it, or if the architect or owner decides to do it, it must be installed according to the fire alarm code. Fire Command Center. The Fire Command Center houses the fire alarm control unit and voice notification microphone and fire telephone if present. By the way, this brings up a hairy problem, and I don't have an answer for this, but I'd like you to know that it's going on. Firemen carry radios. I mean, if you ever have watched the news on TV, you see that the firefighters carry radios. That is their normal form of communication. In the old days, we were required to put in a firefighter telephone system. And the telephone system didn't have telephones. It had jacks, like a jack in the elevator and a jack in the stairwell. And there was usually a jack and a phone and a portable phone with a plug in the fire alarm control panel. And the idea was the firefighter would go out to the stairwell and plug in and talk to the guy standing at the fire alarm command center. To the best of my knowledge, nobody ever used these. It was a code requirement. We did it, but I never heard anybody say anything favorable about them. And again, by the time I got into this, the firefighters were all carrying radios and talking to the fire commander, you know, and doing their job that way. But the problem is, a lot of these buildings are big and concrete, and the concrete blocks the radio communication. So if you're counting on the radio to give the instructions for the proper firefighting, if you're counting on the radio to get the firefighter help if he gets in trouble, what do you do if there's too much concrete between the firefighter and his commander? Well, the controversy today is people are talking about and actually doing this. They're installing radio repeaters in buildings on the firemen's frequencies. So this is what all public service agencies do. When one police car talks to another police car, they do not talk police car to police car. They talk police car to repeater station to the second police car. The reason is you can put a very sensitive receiver at the repeater station, you can put a very powerful transmitter at the repeater station, and you can put it on the top of the adjacent mountain peak so that it has very, very good coverage. And goes, I won't say it goes over the walls, but the much more powerful transmitter makes a lot of difference. Same thing in a building. You would have a fire department repeater within your building so that one firefighter's radio would talk to the repeater. The repeater would rebroadcast it at higher power to the other firefighters on the same channel. This is an ongoing controversy at the time this course is being written. I don't have an answer for it, and it sounds like $10,000. There's no way you could install a repeater for less than $10,000. I would think the fire department would take care of the licensing, so that wouldn't be a problem. But be aware of the problem, and be aware that there's a solution out there. It's just everybody hasn't agreed we want to do that solution. Elevator recall for firefighter service. There is a section here on elevator protection and control. Elevator circuit. Circuit diagram for elevator shunt trip circuit breaker. Now, why do we even bother to do this here? Well, there's two reasons. First, if there are sprinklers in the elevator equipment room, you want to turn off the elevator before the sprinklers operate. Well, how do you do that? You put your own heat detector next to the sprinkler. If the sprinkler is set for 140 degrees, you set your heat detector for 130. When the room gets up to 130, you knock off the elevator, and it gets up to 140, you start spraying it. Now, the problem with this is that there won't be people in that elevator, and you're going to turn off the power, and they're not going to be happy. So what you're supposed to do is go into a recall service on this. But at the end of the day, you must turn off the power to the elevator. The code requires that you have a shunt trip circuit breaker, a power-operated circuit breaker that turns off power so that when that spray head comes on, there are not little sparks coming out of the box below it. Okay, yes, you have to have a shunt trip connection, but you must have a supervised shunt trip connection. And what that means is that you need auxiliary contact from the relay that trips the breaker to tell the fire alarm that it's been successfully tripped, and you need a supervisory relay on the power to the shunt trip circuit so that you know it's available to trip. And in the written version of the course, we've got a drawing of this. But you don't need the drawing. The drawing contributes nothing special. It's just supposed to be an easier way to visualize what's going on. You must supervise the operation of the shunt trip. You must supervise the power available to the shunt trip circuit. Door unlocking devices. Locked doors must be connected to the fire alarm system to permit evacuation, except when permitted by the authority having jurisdiction. The fire alarm battery shall not be used to keep doors locked. This requirement is not widely known. Several problems exist. Since permission is possible to avoid the requirement, many persons simply do not see the requirement as taking place. They don't install it that way. Second, when the requirement is applied, residents will use the fire alarm to let friends in, and strangers bypass safety and security procedures. Audible notification loudness must be 15 decibels above ambient. What does that mean? That means loud. Notification device loudness shall not exceed 120 dB. Now, I think 85 dB is pain, and 120 dBA is a lot of pain. This is the OSHA limit for instantaneous loudness levels. OSHA is real big on 8-hour loudness levels, but I think 120 dBA, that's 120 dB from the reference point with an A weighted to match the ear response. Visual notification. Is 105 dBA. 75 dBA is standard audible notification device. Private mode. Horns in restrooms and hospitals may be rated 45 dB. And that's the volume control we were talking about. Locations of horns, 80 to 96 inches above finished floor, and it's permitted on the ceiling. Locations of strobe, 80 to 96 inches above finished floor, unless accompanied by engineering calculations that people in the area protected by it can see it, even though it's not within the required range. Strobe brightness can be anywhere from 15 to 1,000 candela. Whoa, that's a lot of brightness. 115, I think, was the standard unit that we saw in the specifications that were reviewed previously. Strobe brightness, 115 candela strobe per, 115 candela strobe per 400 square feet, not more than 40 foot center to center. Strobe within 15 feet of the end of the corridor. That's why you normally see a strobe horn on a pole station right by the door. It just makes it easy. A maximum 100 feet between strobes. 177 candela strobe in sleeping areas. There's some special ADA stuff here. I'm going to essentially skip the next section, which is standard graphic icons. The reason I'm going to skip them is they are so dumb. If you buy a modern electronic fire alarm system with a graphic panel, comes from the factory with good stuff that they have worked hard to research, and they give you a manual on it, and I assure you it's acceptable to the fire alarm code. Now, the fire alarm code went one step further, and they gave you a set of typical symbols, and they're really weird symbols, and you don't want to use their recommended symbols. They're not required, and they're not good symbols. You're very happy to use the ones that are provided by the manufacturer. Some of these are, again, let's just skip this. Let's not talk about how bad they are. They've been reduced in the 2007 edition from what they were in the 2002 edition, but they're still pretty bad. Well, this concludes the content portion of the course. You are now in a position to take the test, and you know everything that you need to know, considerably more. The test is not intended to be tricky. It's intended to see whether you were paying attention in the course. Did you pick up the major important elements? There might be some that you will consider nitpicky, but I don't think there's anything that's really tricky. It's certainly not intended that way. I look forward to any comments you can offer after you've taken the quiz. We would like to do a better job on this when we do the next revision. I'd like to hear what you've got to say. Specifically, was there too much material? I talked almost an hour longer this time than I did on the last revision. Well, that suggests there's more content, or I put more aside material into it. If that helped, tell me. The 4 hours instead of 3 made it a better course. If you think it wasted your time for an hour, tell me the 4 hour instead of 3 wasted an hour of my time. We need to know how to provide value to you. Obviously, the written portion is the written portion, and the audible portion is a little bit different. Like to meet your needs, need to know what your needs are in order to do that. Thank you very much for joining me on this, and I hope to see you again on another PDH online course.